Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. This week, it's just myself, Brendan Lotz, and Clinton Matos chatting
to
each other.
Hello again, everybody.
Yeah.
Robin's away. He'll be back next week. We haven't done away with him.
No. He's not gone forever. He's actually at a launch for... I'm sure he'll tell us about it next week, but Ford is launching Ford Pass in South Africa, which is like it's a little smartphone app. So it's launching that in South Africa, and Robin is attending that launch.
Sounds like a subscription service.
It's also weird, but I'm sure, like I said, Robin will have more to chat about. But earlier in February, Google and Ford announced that they were working together to bring Android to Ford motor vehicles so that it wouldn't have to use its own proprietary system. So I don't know why Ford Pass is launching. Maybe it's just a stopgap between that and Ford's own thing. Anyway, Clinton, what have you got for us this week?
Yes, I have something very exciting for us who mainly play on PC. So the ex-PlayStation exclusive game Days Gone is now coming to Steam. This was announced in an interview with one of the big Sony higher-ups, and he announced it, and then like an hour or so later, there was a Steam page for it. He also announced the PlayStation 5 VR, even though there's no pictures or any details about it. You covered that, Brendan.
Yeah.
He mentioned both these things kind of in passing, and they're both massive news.
Yeah.
So there's now a Days Gone Steam page. It used to be a PlayStation 4 exclusive, and something that's interesting is that it has minimum and recommended specs, and they're both very reasonable. Even for the recommended, it's only saying you need a GTX 1060, which is the most popular video card on Steam, or an RX 580, the 8GB version. And you need an i7 or a Ryzen 5 1500X. It's very reasonable. I get a bit nervous when they announce ports like this because sometimes they just have ridiculous recommended specs. The only thing that's a bit unreasonable in my purview is that it says additional notes, SSD is highly recommended. I know a lot of people don't have an SSD for their game storage yet, and it seems to indicate that you're just going to have a lot of load times. Yeah. So even if you don't like Days Gone, this coming to PC is really exciting because last year we got Horizon Zero Dawn on PC, which was also a PlayStation exclusive at one point, and now we're getting this, and in that same interview, the guy also said, sorry, I keep saying the guy, I can't find his name. Yeah, Jim Ryan. He's the president and CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment. He says a whole slate of PlayStation exclusives are coming to PC. So that's very exciting. I think people thought Horizon Zero Dawn was kind of a one and done, once-off thing. But now that we're getting Days Gone and now that he's saying a whole slate, getting very exciting. And if you read the interview, which... we have a link to our story, and then we also, in that, there's a link to the interview. It kind of seems that he's saying, listen, these games cost so much to make. We're just trying to make more money on our investment, which is very fair enough. And now it's kind of looking like, hey, which games are we going to get next? And I said, I really want God of War 2018 on PC, because that would be amazing. And it would also be a good way to introduce PC players to the series because God of War Ragnarok, it's coming out this year, maybe. It's funny, as I wrote the story, some news came out that one of the executive producers on God of War 2018 was like, I don't know if I'm working on the game. There might be delays. We don't know. For now, it's still got a 2021 date. Yeah. So if they released the 2018 game this year, it would give a lot of people an opportunity to get in and play it before Ragnarok is out. And God of War 2018 is such a good game that it might convince people to buy a PlayStation 5 if there were any around to buy. Brendan, you and I were talking about this. God of War is one of the best games ever made, just from like a technical and game design standpoint. That it coming to PC, I mean, I played it recently, just a few weeks ago. I played it recently on a PlayStation 5 using, like, I don't know what it's called, 4K checkerboard or whatever, at 60 FPS. And that was an absolute... amazing experience. And I can only imagine it will look even better on a powerful PC. So yeah, check out that link. Brendan, is there any, besides God of War, is there any like PlayStation games you want? Because you do have a PS4, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so I would say something like Spider-Man would be really, really great. However, A lot of Spider-Man's draw is in the traversal, and I think it's a game that kind of requires a controller.
Yeah, it really feels good on a controller.
Yeah, so I think that Spider-Man, I would love to see Spider-Man on the PC just for, like you say, to see that game running on a very high-end PC. I think that could be something really, really special. Also, I do want to just mention that we also got the, what are those games called? From the Detroit Become Human.
Yes, we also got those on PC. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, that was also last year.
I think the difference is that game, I could be mistaken. Let me look it up. I don't think that's a quote-unquote first-party PlayStation game.
Well, it was an exclusive at launch.
Yeah, it was an exclusive. But the Horizon and Days Gone were first-party games. They were actually made in conjunction with Sony. I'm just trying to find if Detroit was the same.
I don't think it was.
I don't want to... Yeah, but... So with those other two games, Sony Interactive was actually the publisher and they had some hand in development. Quantic Dream was the developer and publisher of Detroit.
That's their name.
It just so happened to be a PlayStation exclusive. But yeah, a lot of these games are now coming to PC, which is fantastic.
I mean, I do want to just also point out, right, that during development for these games, a lot of these guys are like you're developing on a PC and then they port it to, to the console. 100%. So like... I suppose the porting is really where things get a bit tricky, and I can't comment on how difficult it is to port things, but from previous experience, it seems very tricky. So, this is exciting news, though. I mean, having some PlayStation exclusives coming to PC, I do wonder what this means for PlayStation moving forward. Is PlayStation going to become like an open platform and similar to like what Microsoft is trying to do?
More and more, it's becoming... is the sentiment was like, why would I buy a console? And the reason is that in South Africa and many other countries that aren't the US or the UK, you just cannot build a PC that is in any way similar to a console because of how high the prices of PC parts are. That's a whole nother story for another day. The fact that the console importers stick very close to the overseas recommended prices, but the PC parts don't. That's a whole nother conversation, but I think that's really holding it back in South Africa, and it's a reason why even if we get to an idyllic future where all games are available on all platforms, I think in places like South Africa, consoles will still be popular because of that. And we're going to go to our next story soon. I just want to mention something. I would really love if some of the Uncharted games came to PC, like the Nathan Drake Collection, because I cannot shoot guns on a controller anymore. It drives me insane. I had actually not played Uncharted 4. I played all the other games because I had a PS3. But then I didn't have a PS4, and I borrowed the office PS5 to play Uncharted 4. And I was having a miserable time because I cannot aim thumbsticks anymore.
Yeah,
I'm just too used to a mouse. I've been using PC mainly for about 8 years now. I cannot shoot with a thumbstick anymore. So they don't even need to give us like the brand new Uncharted 4. They could give us the Nathan Drake Collection, which is 1-3. And also Ghost of Tsushima, which is also a really fun game. So, Days Gone is coming soon. You can add it to your wish list. And an entire slate. We don't know what that means yet, but more PlayStation games are probably coming to PC. And we'll have a link to all of that. And Brendan, you're going to get to our next news story, which is also about games. Yeah. It's about Destiny.
Yes. Thought we'd do some game news before we get into the meat of this podcast, which is about the Matric results. Should have mentioned that at the top of the podcast, but anyway,
it would be like the headline.
Yeah, so you'll know, you'll definitely know. But before that, this week has been a pretty big week for the looter shooter genre. Anthem Next was canned. I'm not going to say that I'm surprised. I kind of expected it, considering how long it's been since we've seen any news from BioWare regarding that. I wasn't really expecting it to go further. Then yesterday we had Outriders release its demo, and Bungie gave People Can Fly, I think it was 18 minutes. Yeah, it was 18 minutes before the news from Bungie started coming down from streamers. So I'm not going to go into everything that was discussed, but yesterday executive or assistant game director for Destiny 2, Joe Blackburn, who goes by the name Joe Garoth, in the community. He published a highly anticipated state of the game, or rather Road to the Witch Queen piece. And it's very long and very exhaustive. I'm not going to go over everything here. There'll be a link to the story where I go into more detail. And within that story, there's another link to the original Bungie post, which goes into even more detail. But one of the most important things that came from this post is that sunsetting is dead. Sunsetting has been sunset. So yeah. If you don't know what sunsetting is, with the release of Beyond Light, Bungie had a bit of a problem. And that problem was that gear that has been amassed over the years by players, some certain outliers were identified. So there were certain weapons, less so armor, but weapons that were being favored by players because they were strong. And I mean, it kind of makes sense in a game where you are playing against other players, especially in the PvP space, you're going to go with the best option and the strongest option. But the problem is this creates a kind of stale meta where folks who don't have these weapons are constantly hitting their head against a wall because they keep dying to them and they can't acquire them. So what Bungie did to address this problem was say, right, up until a certain point, and that point was last year, November, you cannot take gear forward with you into future seasons. It will be capped at a power level, and you can't take it with you any further. The problem with this is, though, that overnight, Bungie made a whole bunch of gear, and I mean, like, we're talking here, so Destiny 2 was released in 2015. That's 5 years worth of gear became useless overnight. Certain gear was immune to this, and that's exotics. But, I mean, you could only equip one exotic weapon and one exotic armor piece, so that doesn't really save the problem here. So overnight, players didn't have the gear that they had been using for a couple of years, and this didn't sit well with the community, obviously, because stuff that you may have spent hours, and it seems silly, but in a game like Destiny, you can spend hours grinding for one weapon. Yeah. For one particular role that you want and the perks that this weapon has. So it becomes kind of pointless when in a year's time, all of your efforts are going to be useless. So Bungie has removed sunsetting completely. They are going to look at ways to keep things fresh and to make sure that that outliers that we've seen in the past don't happen again. But that's going to take balancing and that sort of stuff. But the highlight here is that sunsetting is no more. Another rather important piece of information that is being glossed over by the community is the forthcoming expansion, the big title expansion that usually happens in September, is being delayed until early 2022. That expansion is called The Witch Queen. The reason it's being delayed is, of course, COVID-19 related issues, and then Bungie needs to sort out Destiny from a technical standpoint. There are a number of problems in terms of the systems that Bungie has introduced over the years, bugs, promises. The scope of the game is simply way bigger than Bungie in its independent state is able to keep up with. So by delaying it, this gives Bungie the ability to implement those big, massive expansions that they announced last week and make the game as good as possible. So there's a lot of good things here. And I just want to, on a personal note, I tweeted this out earlier today, and there's a lot of talk about games that are Destiny killers, quote unquote. We've had The Division, we've had Anthem, we've had, now we have Outriders. And of course there's Warframe, and the only one of those games that really competes with Destiny is Warframe. And that's because, like Bungie, Warframe, or the developers of Warframe, care about their game. They are obsessed with their game and they keep their community updated constantly. Bungie does it through This Week at Bungie. Every single week there's an update. This is what we're doing to the game. This is things that we're considering. And then the community responds, mostly on Reddit and through Twitter and other social places, and Bungie listens and takes that feedback to heart and implements some of the changes that the community suggests. So with something like Anthem, I can understand why Anthem failed, because there was no communication on the part of BioWare and EA. And when there was communication, it was drip-fed and, oh, we have these great ideas. Cool, what are those ideas? And I think that this is, if you want to make a Destiny killer, you've got to emulate what Bungie does. You've got to be obsessed with your game, provide constant updates. Like, And I'm sure this is the same for a lot of other games. I know, Clinton, you used to play Enter the Gungeon quite a bit. Yeah. And
I also used to play to Warframe. Yeah. I got very much addicted to that game. Over the course of like 3 months, I played like 400 hours.
Yeah.
And I had to stop because it was basically an addiction. But that's a conversation for another day. But I can mirror your sentiment that the developers at Digital Extremes, DE, they really did care about the game. And they had, I can't remember the name of their live streams, but they had streams like the ones that they do for Destiny.
Yeah.
So I completely understand what you're saying when they care about the game and they keep everyone updated and they go into the Reddit threads and comment on, you know, they reply to comments. So, I mean, that's what, if you want people to play your game, you know, forever, you kind of need to support it. Forever.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I suppose in recent years, like, World of Warcraft, I assume, may have done something similar. Maybe it was just the gameplay that was addictive. Engaging. I know Blizzard doesn't like the word addictive. Engaging is the word they prefer. It's really good to see this sort of work or this sort of response from Bungie to a lot of the issues that the game has been having. But like I say, I think that if you really want to make a good game, care about it. And we've seen that time and time again with games, is that when the developer cares and really cares, not just about making money, but about producing the best possible product, see No Man's Sky, you can create something really, really spectacular.
I think the problem was that for Anthem, again, which got cancelled now properly, it wasn't just the developers, it was also EA. They might not have wanted to continue, because I imagine that game was a money pit.
Yeah, eventually, especially now when it's not, when Anthem Next was still being developed and like they were working on it, and there was no real, like, how do we monetize this? Like, for instance, with No Man's Sky, they did all that work for free. I mean, it wasn't like they charged for those updates, those quality of life updates that started coming down. I mean, now, sure, I don't really know because I don't play the game, but I'm sure in future they will charge for DLC.
Well, I mean, they've released several expansions and every single one of them has been free.
Yeah,
they're proper expansions. It's not just like a little piece of DLC where they add some content. It's proper expansions where they change the game fundamentally, and all of those so far have been free.
And I mean, that's just like, it has made me want to play No Man's Sky, because I appreciate a developer that's going, you know what, even if we don't make any money off of this, we love our game. We want our game to be the best it can be. I mean, is taking pride in your work something of the past? Seems like it. But anyway, let's move along on to something a bit more serious, I think is the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm.
The 2020 matric exams. Oh boy.
Yes. Clinton, if you want to take us away with this.
So yeah, let me give everybody some context. If, I don't know, you've just woken up from a coma. Last year, there was lockdowns, there was COVID, there was everything, and it absolutely fundamentally changed how education happens in this country, because there's a massive divide of people and students who have access to remote learning. Computers, internet, phones, all of that. There's a lot of kids who don't. And it made the lockdown and studying impossible for a lot of them. So when it came to write the matric exams, they were all at a massive disadvantage. Even those who had access to proper remote learning, because COVID was so sudden, there wasn't decades to set up this proper system to teach kids online.
I mean, we've had decades. We just didn't know that the end of a decade would result in a pandemic.
Yeah. So when it came time to write the matrix, everyone, even those who don't have children, who have no stake in the matrix exams, they're kind of on edge. They're biting their lips. They're saying, what is going to happen? So this happened at the end of last year, and now we finally have the results. And they're still pretty good. Assuming that the department didn't fudge the numbers, the overall pass rate in South Africa is 76.2%, which is a decrease from last year, but not as much of a decrease as we were expecting. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about, we're going to hit you with some facts and figures, but as always, we have links to everything we discuss, so it's always easier to read facts and figures than to discuss them. So we will put a link to everything, And the department has also put out the a massive report, which is 96 pages long. It gets real in-depth into, you know, not just province by province performance, but subject by subject.
And then quintile by quintile. Like, it's extensive. It's a really, really good read.
Yeah, so we'll put links to everything, but we just want to talk about some of the really important things, starting with that 76.2% pass rate. That's the average for all the provinces. And the highest pass rate province in South Africa was the Free State, 85.1%. And even though it's the highest, it was a decline of 3.2% from last year.
Oh, wow.
So the Free State really knocked it out of the park. Following that is Gauteng with 83.8%, and then the Western Cape with 79.9%. And then the other provinces are all below 80%. The lowest was Northern Cape with 66% on the dot, which is a 10.5% decline from 2019, which is crazy. And we're going to get to something else, which also almost had a 10% decline. So what do you think of those just right at the top? Because I think they had the presentation to announce these details was like 2 or 3 hours long. It was actually longer than that. It was about 5 if you did the kind of quote-unquote pre-show.
Yeah.
But I think that 76.2 is the big thing that everyone wanted to know. What did you think, Brendan? Is that higher or lower than you expected it to be?
It's a lot higher than I expected it to be. I was expecting like 60%, maybe high 50s. And I know that seems very negative Nancy of me. Yeah. Or probably, I should probably say something like negative Ned or whatever. Given what was happening at the time last year with the lockdowns, the constant miscommunication, or not miscommunications, but the constant moving of dates for schools to reopen, not knowing if schools were going to reopen until literally like the weekend before. Like, it was very, very troublesome to, from an outsider's perspective at least, to look at what was happening to the education system in South Africa.
100%.
I don't want this to come across as a slight against the Department of Education. I have many problems with the Department of Education, but given what we were faced with, like you say, Clinton, I mean, it was very sudden when the pandemic came in and hit South Africa, and I think that the ANC government did a very good job by locking down as hard as we did, as early as we did, because as the months wore on, we started to see just how bad this pandemic was and how many people were suffering because of it. And I know we can talk about economics and the state of the economy after lockdown, but I mean, do we want to have that conversation and then just ignore the millions of people that could have died as a result?
I honestly think if the government's approach was more lackadaisical, our country could have gone into total like ruin.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that. I think if it was just, you know, keep going to work, everything, I think our hospitals would have been overrun. There would have been crime to get medical care. I really think our country could have been not destroyed, but you know what I mean. Like put into complete ruin in every sense of the word if we didn't have a proper hard lockdown.
So,
I'm happy there was that lockdown.
So I think so my reasoning for saying that it's higher than I expected it to be is based on that, is that we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know what to see. And I think that as many students who didn't achieve a pass, I think they should still feel kind of not proud. I guess that's very hard to do when you haven't passed your matric exams. But I think that you should kind of take some solace in the fact that like, this is something that nobody in living memory has had to undergo, right? I mean, the fact that you stumbled now in matric, right at the end, when there was a global pandemic going on, I don't think you should beat yourself up over this. Obviously, you're going to have to do rewrites and things like that, which sucks, but considering what's been going on, I mean, I don't think I would have passed. If I had been going through this, quite honestly, I don't think I would have passed.
Yeah, I think I mirror your sentiments exactly. I also expected it to be much lower just because I know how difficult matric is and I know what a mental strain it takes on people, even without the pandemic. I mean, every year we have those stories where on the day or a few days later, we have stories of kids killing themselves because they either didn't pass or they didn't get the results they wanted. And those are years without the pandemic. I cannot imagine the mental strain that kids were going through. I mean, I was in the middle of last year, I was still in university studying through UNISA full-time / in my own time. And that was difficult just because of the mental strain of everything going on around you. And then you need to sit down and you need to memorize. I wanted to use a strong word there. You need to memorize things which in the moment don't seem at all important to living during a pandemic.
Yeah.
So I completely emphasize, but I did, because I know how difficult it is, I also expected it to be low. So it was higher than I thought it was going to be. And again, I put this in all my stories about the matrix. You know, congrats to all of them, even if you didn't pass it. It was really a Herculean effort, and not just the students. I think there's a lot of really good teachers and educators and other people involved in this pipeline who sometimes don't get recognition, or you just think the students doing it on them by themselves, but it isn't. It's a whole support group, even parents and friends in that. They also have to be congratulated. And, so yeah, higher than I thought it was.
Let's not forget that, especially teachers, I think we need to kind of give them a pat on the back here, because going from teaching in a classroom to teaching on Zoom is two different worlds apart. It's like being a stage actor and then having to go and perform in Hollywood. The two are similar, sure, but they are very different. And talking to a camera is very, very difficult. I mean, even just having this conversation with you now, I can't see you. I can't see your facial cues. I can't see when you want to say something. Like, it's very difficult having this sort of like one-way almost communication where you only have person's voice. And I mean, we've seen like, Zoom kind of gives you the video aspects, but I mean, like, you go and sit for 6 months and just watch YouTube videos and tell me that you feel like you've socialized. It's not the same. So I think all around, despite the poor results, I think considering what was happening at the time when all this was going down, I think that everybody should feel proud of themselves, and congratulations to everybody that made it through the hellscape that was 2020, especially in the education space.
Yeah. So, like I said, that big pass rate is the information everyone wanted to know. And immediately the next question is always, how did they do in math and physics? we kind of have, I don't know what other word to use, but a fetish for these two subjects in South Africa.
Yeah.
So many people are like, what about these subjects? We want to know about these subjects. I kind of get it, because they are the like premier STEM subjects. And a lot of degrees, especially engineering degrees and stuff like that, they will say you need, you know, to pass whatever, but you also need to achieve this minimum in physical sciences and math. So I understand why people look to them so often, but it's really fetishized. I don't know how else to say it. So let's quickly look at that. And again, I have a story on this specifically. How did our matrix do in STEM subjects? And the government kind of, they understand this, and they put out a table in these in the summary document that I talked about. And they call 11 subjects gateway subjects. Now, it's very strange, because I couldn't find a description of what a quote-unquote gateway subject is in the document. So maybe someone, you know, can fill us in on Twitter or Facebook.
So I do have an idea of what it is. So these are subjects that primarily are used to determine whether you get into university or not.
Ah, okay. That makes
sense.
So
if you have a pass in these subjects, there are better than low chances that you have that you're going to get a bachelor pass.
Fair enough. So I just want to list them quick again. It's a bit wordy, but we'll go through it quick. It's accounting, agricultural science, business studies, economics, geography, history, life orientation, life sciences, mathematical literacy, mathematics, and physical science. So let's start with math and physical science. And before I get into these numbers, it's worth remembering that when the students were writing them, mathematics paper 2 and physical sciences paper 2 were leaked.
Yeah.
Now, it's a whole other kettle of fish. We've discussed it in another podcast. We've talked about it at length. We have stories about it on the site. Those were leaked, but the amount of leakage that actually happened is still up in the air. And at the end of the day, these results that were put out were declared valid by various governmental bodies. So it's interesting to look at these this year because of the pandemic, because of everybody always looking to these two subjects as an indicator of our advancement in STEM, and also because the paper 2 for both of these were leaked. So keep that all in mind. Let's go. Mathematics. Pass rate, again, which is only 30%. Keep that in mind. In 2020, was 53.8. Not good at all, but it's worth remembering that that actually went down. In 2019, it was 54.6. Now, what's even more interesting is that the department provides a five-year results table that we have in our story here. So 53 in 2020, 54 in 2019. 2018 was the highest at 58%. But what's really interesting is that in 2016 and 2017, there were 51.1 and 51.9 respectively. So in the year with the pandemic, we actually had a higher pass rate than 2016 and 2017.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I'm not entirely sure why that is. I'm sure somebody with a degree in numbers and stuff like this will look at all of this and they'll say it's X, Y, and Z. But that's really worth looking at. It's really interesting.
Yeah, especially when you look at the rates that we fell, I mean, from 2019 to 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 54.6 in 2019 versus 53.8, am I looking at, yes, in 2020, which in it's the greater scheme of things is, yeah, exactly. I mean, the drop from 2018 to 2019 was way worse, from 58 to 54.6, and there was no pandemic going on. So, I mean, in the greater scheme of things, the class of 2020 actually did pretty well, I would say.
Yeah, and if we look at mathematical literacy, I know a lot of people overlook this subject. There's a lot of elitism around it, but I think we should still look at it.
Yeah.
Mathematical literacy in 2020 actually went up.
Yeah.
In terms of the pass rate. It went from 80.6 in 2019 to 80.8.
Whoa.
And 80.8 is the highest in the last 5 years. 2016, 2017, and 2018 were all in the low 70s.
Yeah.
So that has had quite, again, I know there's a lot of elitism around the subject, but it is math at the end of the day. It's worth, you know, making sure that all our students in South Africa have some education when it comes to math.
Yeah.
So that's worth remembering. So let's talk about physical science, because that's when things get grim.
Yeah.
Pass rate in 2020 was 65.8. Pass rate last year was 75.5. It's almost a 10% drop. It's 9.7% to be exact, but it's almost a 10% drop, which is crazy. But it's also worth remembering that, again, 2016 and 2017, it was actually lower. It was 62 and 65.1. So, again, 2020, I don't know what was going on in 2016 and 2017. The numbers were really low. So, again, it's a massive drop, but it's still not as bad as a few years ago. It's very interesting when you look at all of these. And then a few other ones I want to look at really quick.
Sorry, can I just highlight one? History. Sure. So history actually saw an increase from 2019 to 2020, from 90% in 2019 to 92.1% in 2020. Business studies, similarly, in 2019 was 71.0 and 77.9% in 2020. Those two, I think, are really important as well, especially business studies. And maybe the pandemic actually helped in that aspect, because we saw so much pivoting, so much innovation in the business world, that maybe it bled through into the school curriculum as well. That's really interesting to me.
Yeah. Another one I wanted to talk about, so life orientation. Every single student in Matric has to take life orientation. And, you know, I kind of have a problem with the elitism over mathematical literacy, but I will say that the life orientation subject is an absolute joke.
Yeah.
I understand what life orientation is supposed to be, but I understand that the curriculum, I mean, I've been out of school for about 8 years, coming on 9 now, but even back then, and it seems so now, life orientation is just a dumb subject. They don't teach you anything about life, and it's also very easy. I don't know why the subject still exists as it is. And I bring it up because the pass rate is ridiculously high. in 2020 is 99.4. In the last 5 years, it hasn't been below 99. So, I wish life orientation should teach you about tax.
Yeah.
It's a touchy subject, but it should include sexual orientation, like sex ed that they have in America.
Yeah.
It should teach you, in my opinion, it should teach you stuff like getting a phone contract or taking out a loan. I know that's covered sometimes in accounting and stuff like that. But life orientation should orient you for life after school. And yeah. I really don't think it does. No. It tries to, but it's really dumb. Anyway, that's a whole nother triad. I'm sure people who teach it are very angry.
I do. Sorry, I just want to jump in here very quickly. While we were chatting about physical science, I actually pulled up the curriculum from the DBE here, and I'm just scrolling through it. And something that I'm noticing is that there is a lot of practical work that has to be done within that subject.
Yeah,
and I think that's we don't want to say that 65.8% is fine. I think that we should also recognize that a lot of science work is physical stuff that you kind of need to see to understand, right? Like, if you want to know how to make a battery with a cathode and an anode, it's easier to see that than to have it explained to you in scientific diagrams and in text. Yeah. So I do wonder if that maybe didn't play a role in maybe the lower score this year. But I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. So it's very fair. So now we're going to move on to something else. This was kind of a cynical move that the government did. On the day that the exam results were being released, they were being released from 4 p.m. onwards. And this collection of tweets came out at about 1 p.m. It's basically a collection of tweets that say, okay, what happens after this stuff? But a lot of it is focused on what happens after my results come out, and maybe they're not what I expected. So, I mean, the first thing, it's basically a Q&A session that the government did on Twitter. And because Twitter is absolutely horrendous for formatting, I took the liberty to write a story where I made it more readable. And the first one is, what do I do if I didn't get the position at the institution of my choice? And again, we'll put a link to all of this. It's easier to read. And basically, the Department of Higher Education has a central application clearinghouse, which is, quote unquote, a temporary mechanism created by the department to assist the following applicants. And they are for people who didn't get into the institution of their choice. And there are links to all of this, and you need to apply for it before 30th of April. These are good resources, but it's very cynical that the government put this out just before the results are coming out. It isn't just for those who didn't perform. For example, it gives you some information here. A lot of people looking to go to private colleges are worried, is this place legit? So the government has put out some guidelines you can follow to make sure they are legit. Something else, how to access my school certificate. Sometimes when you apply for jobs, you need that, but you might not have it.
Mm.
Especially for people who want to get into the workforce as fast as possible, they might not have your certificate yet, but you want to start applying. Mm. So again, give this a read. You can check it out. And I've put a link to all of this that people can look at. And we also had a story from a few years ago looking into Technicons and stuff like that. In South Africa, there's a massive focus on just going and getting a bachelor's degree. And then sometimes some parents and some educators are like, I don't care what it is, as long as it's a bachelor's degree from somewhere. And that kind of some people, you know, putting aside the fact that that might not be for all students, that might not be what they want. There's a lot of stuff that you could look into that isn't necessarily that, like going to, I don't know, not even a technical thing, like going to a coding boot camp. We wrote to, the story comes up every year that South Africa needs IT workers. They need coders. And maybe that's something you could look into. Maybe you are now planning to rewrite. Maybe you have some free time. You're taking a gap year if you're lucky enough to do that. Maybe you could look into, you know, learning a practical trade, learning to code, stuff like
that. I have some advice. I have a very important piece of advice. Look at cybersecurity. There is a massive shortage of cybersecurity professionals, and a lot of the qualifications related to that field you can do online. And they are affordable. I mean, they're not free, but they are going to cost you some money. But they are generally less than attending a university full time. So if you're looking at doing something where you can earn a lot of money and get a really worthwhile skill, then cybersecurity, I would recommend folks look at getting into. And when I say a lot of money, I mean a lot of money.
Some of the highest paid in the country in terms of like average salary.
Businesses want to keep their data safe, ladies and gentlemen. With Popia coming into full effect later this year, cybersecurity is very, very important. And with the pandemic, we've seen an increase in the amount of threats. The threat surface, attack surface has just increased and continues to increase. So if you want a pro tip, maybe consider something in cybersecurity.
And also, a great thing about this is that it's completely country neutral.
Yep.
So, like, if you study this and you want to leave South Africa at some point, this is a skill that is in short supply around the world.
Yeah.
It's not just a third world South African problem, as a lot of things are. This is a worldwide skill shortage.
Yeah.
So it's such a good study thing. And, like, if you're a doctor, for example, that is a skill that any country would want you, right? Because that's also a short staff skill. But even if you're a fully qualified doctor in South Africa and you move overseas, you will need to do some orientation for how that stuff is done. But I think IT it's just completely country independent.
Yeah.
In study here, and what you learn will almost certainly be 100% applicable in other countries. The only thing that might be different is like Popia and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you're doing like back-end database work, that doesn't concern you. You can just go to a new country and get working immediately. Or you could stay in South Africa and be employed by a foreign body, and you could be paid in a
dollars.
Nice... it could be paid in another currency. I know a few people like that. They have a sweet setup, because every time the country gets worse in terms of the economy, their paycheck goes up.
Yeah.
Which is a very nice situation to be in, like, to say the least.
So yeah, IT is definitely, especially with all this digital stuff that's happening now. And also, if you have a great idea, if you're a matric student who has a great idea for fixing how online conferences work, give me a call, because I would love to have a chat with you.
Zoom will send someone to your house. You don't even need to get in contact with them. They'll just show up like the government. So I just want to get to the last subtopic of this big topic, and we'll end the podcast there. We'll have a little conversation about this. And now it's, how do I get into university? Because UNISA put out a statement that they're saying, listen, we are now waiting for the government. If you've applied to us, we are now waiting for the government to get in touch with us to supply us with your results so we can then offer you a position. And there's a whole kettle of fish around UNISA right now. They were forced to decrease the amount of students they could take on. And there was a probe, and there's a whole thing about UNISA, but it is kind of indicative of the entire education system, where matrics again have to do a bit of waiting. If they've already done all their applications and everything, even if they have their results, you know, with them, which I think they'll release mostly now, they will now need to wait for universities to say you got in or you didn't get in. And aside from the results, for certain subjects that are really popular or have low levels of space available, you might not get in even if you had really good results. So now students kind of just have to wait, which I know for a lot of people, waiting is the hardest part. Isn't that a song? So I'll put a link to what UNISA was saying. They're also saying, if you are one of the lucky ones who got in early and you are now ready to go, you should now access your study material online, because UNISA has a whole problem with delivering study material, and it's really important stuff that you need to actually study. That stuff is usually sent out, but because of the pandemic and everything, they now just say, please, just access it as a PDF online.
Yeah.
If you prefer to study from physical papers and books, please just get that. The sooner you start, the better. And again, there's a whole other kettle of fish with UNISA. It's moved to a very weird system where instead of having a two-semester school year, they now have one long semester, and it's a whole thing. I don't want to get into it now, but I do just want to end off talking about what students do now. And we did just touch that on a bit by by saying you should kind of look into what other things you can do besides university. So if you are a student now, start waiting, but kind of start making some plans in case things don't go 100% how you like.
Mm.
Brendan, I want to know, what do you, as I know you just gave them advice, but what do you think for students now? You either got the results and you're sitting waiting to go to university, or you didn't pass. Have you heard any stories? Do you know any matrics right now who are kind of in the lurch?
So I actually deal with a couple of, or I have a couple of friends who are teachers. I was very close to the trials and tribulations that they faced last year. But I think one of the important things that I'm getting from a lot of these teachers is try and acquire as many skills as you can, even if you're in school right now. Whether you're in grade 8 or grade 11, whatever it may be, if you're the matric class of 2021, try and get as many different skills as you can, even if they are things that you learn for free. I mean, there are a number of free courses online that you can take, whether that's like a writing course or learning how to code. I mean, there are so many free resources online. And I think, well, I don't want to say everything's online, go there, because I know that we have a lot of connectivity issues here in South Africa, and access to the internet is still something that is very problematic. I think that the internet is really underutilized as a resource for education. There is so much you can learn, even just passing things. I mean, I know when I left matric, I didn't actually know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. Nowadays, I have a bit of a clearer idea, but I mean, I'm now 33 and some change. And I think that one of the most important things I've learned, and I don't mean to be this old toppy telling young kids how to live their lives, but something I've learned is that nobody can ever take knowledge away from you, no matter what that's in, right? And you can debate about scientific theory and all that sort of stuff. But if you learn something, a skill, nobody can ever take that away from you. You can get kicked out of university, but they'll never take away the information that you've learned, right? And I just want to reiterate is that just because, even if you failed, there are other avenues that you can pursue. Like your TVET colleges, which are like basically a way for you to go and get a qualification that isn't a degree. If you want to learn a skill, then a TVET is a really great place to go. There's, like you say, Clinton, I mean, there's a lot of elitism around things like maths and science. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that not everybody is designed to work in those spheres, right? I mean, I love science. I absolutely adore it. I love the developments that happen there, the stuff that humans are able to achieve, the things we're able to analyze. I mean, there is a rover 2 million miles away, 2 million kilometers away, that was built by humans, right? And it's working.
It's basically an alien object that we made.
That we made and put on another planet. That's amazing. But could I ever do that? Not a chance. No way, right? Because I lack that acumen for maths and engineering and all that sort of stuff. I would be the person that'd be like, yeah, just fling it onto Mars. We'll deal with it when it gets there, and spend billions on a train wreck on another side, on another planet. But I think that even if you've failed this year or failed last year, what I think is important is the knowledge that you have isn't useless, right? See how you can apply that knowledge in other places. Obviously, if you can, I would advise pursuing your matric qualification, because it is the bare minimum thing you need to go forward in life. And I don't mean that from a success in your whole life. Like, nobody who has ever dropped out of matric has ever achieved anything. I don't mean that at all. But I mean that it makes your life a little bit easier. When you want to apply for a job or you want to apply to further your education, you are going to need a matric certificate. So maybe put in the work to pass that matric exam. And the other thing is that this year, if you're a matric who's simply just rewriting your exams, or you're having to go through grade 11 again, you've already done this, right? So, I mean, use the stuff, use this time to improve on the areas where you might have failed. And I promise you, from my own experience, people who have had to go back and do matric again come out stronger on the other side because they're able to go through the stuff where they might have failed and go, oh, okay, here's my second chance at learning it again. And everybody that I know that has had to repeat matric has come out stronger on the other side.
Yeah. Something else I want to mention, two things quick, is that a lot of matrics have this mentality. They have like, some of them have their like whole lives planned out, and they think that if they like miss a year, like either they have to repeat matric or they consider like 2020, right? Or they're like, if I miss 1 year of this, my entire life is ruined. Like, it's a really narrow-minded way of looking at things, and I'm saying that not to be mean, but I'm saying it in the grand scope of things, especially because you guys who are young are probably going to live longer than all of us because medicine gets better every year. Mm. 1 year makes zero difference. You know, I finished my degree when I was 25, right?
Mm.
And I felt like I did stuff really late. But then, you know, some people are getting their degrees when they're 30, 40, 50. Some people are getting PhDs when they're 80. There's no time limit on this stuff.
Mm.
Just do it when you do it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying be lackadaisical and, oh, do it whenever. I'm just saying that 1 year is not going to make an ounce of difference.
Absolutely.
When if you apply to a job and for some reason you have to provide your matric certificate or your bachelor's degree or your qualification or whatever, they're not going to look at it and they'll like take out a calculator and they'll be like, you turned 18 in this year, but you only got your degree 2 years later or something like that. They're not going to do that. Nobody cares.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times when you apply to jobs, they're like, do you have a matric certificate? You'll be like, yes. Like, okay. And I'm not saying you can use that to kind of game the system. I'm just saying most people don't care, and they don't care that you maybe got 10% lower in math than you really wanted to. You missed your degree in math. They're like, did you pass? Yes. Okay, that's good enough.
Yeah.
So I think in matric, for some reason, because of this, again, this fetishization of getting good marks and for certain subjects and stuff, it creates this very narrow-minded mindset that terrifies students. And I just want to tell you guys to just worry about it a bit less.
Yeah.
Especially because it's all over now. Maybe if you're going for a rewrite or something. I'm just saying, if it wasn't great like you thought it was going to be or whatever, don't be as worried as you might think you are.
As in
a bad place as you think you are.
Something I was told, maybe a bit too late, it was when I was in my late 20s. Somebody came to me and I was always worried about where my future was going, all that sort of nonsense. And somebody told me, they showed me a ruler. Held up a ruler and they pointed to the 5 centimeter mark. It was a 30 centimeter ruler. And they said, this is where you are right now in your life at the 5 centimeter mark. There's all this other stuff before you peg it, right? Don't focus on the 5 centimeters you've done already because you still got another 25 centimeters to go. I mean, that's really simplifying things. Absolutely. And I'm not saying that everybody's experience in the first couple of years of their life is equal. It's absolutely not. But in the greater scope of your life, what is 5 years in high school really? It doesn't really mean anything. And I promise you something right now. These 5 years that you've spent in high school or the 2 years that you spent in matric, you're going to look back in when you hit 30 or 25 or whatever age it is, and you're going to look back and go, wow, that was actually nothing in terms of stuff. Like, I don't know about you, Clinton, but I sometimes look back at my school years and go, damn, I squandered that stuff. Hey, I should have been way more relaxed, way less stressed, because the moment I started working, that's when stuff started to actually be stressful. When you've got debtors knocking on your door going, hey, where's our payment at the end of the month, and you haven't got a paycheck, that's stress. Just put it into context, everybody. If you're rewriting matric, I know it sucks. Having to redo something sucks. Nobody likes doing it. But in the greater scheme of things, it's really not that big of a deal. And like I said, this is a chance to come out stronger than you ever were.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I was the most stressed out I've ever been in matric.
Yeah. You were in hospital, Imatric, weren't you?
That's a whole other story. We'll talk about it right there in one podcast. I almost died. I went to heart failure, liver failure. I was in a lot of failure. I had my last rites read to me by a priest and a rabbi. I almost died from the stress. Literally, yeah. I know a lot of people said, oh, the stress is killing me. No, the stress almost literally did kill me. So I've got some experience in this. Please just calm down a bit, especially now that the results are out. And I mean, the hard work was writing them, and that's over now, except you're rewriting. But again, you've written them already. You're just doing it again.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a hint. I'll give you a hint, everybody that's in school, is that people who set exams are really lazy. So use past exam papers to your advantage.
Even in university.
Yeah, I remember writing matric. I did past exam papers for science for a week, right? I went back like 5 years doing past exam papers. Now, this wasn't when the internet was around. Like, we had to go and find them. And lo and behold, 90% of our final science paper was based on papers from like 5 years ago. Yeah. So
past papers are a godsend.
Absolutely. Because like I say, people who set exams are really lazy. And it's very difficult to set exam questions. So sometimes they'll just change a couple of figures. But the essence of the question is usually the same.
But something else I want to get to just before we end off here, Brendan, is that if you are going to be doing other things besides going to university, it might really behoove you, especially if, like I think most people, they don't really know what they want to do.
Mm.
If you go do like some free online courses, you can't do like work experience right now because of the pandemic, but maybe some places still offer it. If you give yourself a wide array of experiences, it will inform what you want to do with
absolutely
your study and your life. I know a lot of people, they're in primary school and then they're in high school. And if you ask them, what do you want to do when you're older? They always have one answer. And that answer might have been because their parents pushed it on them. It might have been that they saw it in a movie and it looked like a good career or whatever. However they got to that, they get so, I don't want to say stuck up on the idea, but they get so tunnel vision that they don't consider anything else. And then they arrive at university and they do it for a year or two. They maybe even finish their degree, or they finish their degree and then they go into the workforce. And they have this shocking realization one day. They're like, oh no, I hate this. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to who have that realization. Or I speak to them and they're like the CEO of a company. And I ask, what did you study? Oh, I studied, I don't know, art. And you're like, oh, but you're not using your degree at all. They're like, yes. I think most people are doing something where they're not using their degree at all.
Yeah.
I think it's like engineers and doctors are the main people who study stuff and then they actually apply that in their everyday lives. So if you can, if you're in the, you know, you're lucky enough to be able to study, but to experience a wide array of things, it will really help you in the long run.
I agree with that completely. I mean, I've done every sort of job, from marketing to sound engineering to being a professional roadie. Like, I've done as many jobs as I can do. And in each of those jobs, I learned what I liked and what I didn't like. And eventually I decided that writing was what I wanted to do. And kind of went 360 in that journey. But anyway, I mean, like Clinton says, it's a journey of things. And I guarantee you, for the vast majority of matric students, the stuff that you are passionate about now, give it a couple of years, because you might not feel the same way and you might change. Also, the workspace is changing constantly. There are jobs today that didn't exist when I was in high school. So
today that didn't exist like 2 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
another thing I want to tell you guys, again, these are just like Uncle Clinton, Uncle Brendan, want to tell you some things. No one knows what they're doing. Everybody's a headless chicken. When you're a kid, you think the adults know what they're doing. The adults can reach the stuff in the top shelves. The adults get to drive. The adults get paid for their work. They must have it all figured out. No, it's all a lie. The entirety of human civilization is built on people just saying, I don't know, that seems like a good idea. And then they do it. And then they're like, oh, I guess that was a good idea. Nobody knows what they're doing at all. No one. even people who are like 60 and the CEO of a company, they're just winging it. Every day they go into the office and they just guess. I'm telling you this as a 100% certainty of life. Everybody, every adult has this realization at some point in their life. But they're like, hey, wait a minute. I'm not the imposter. Everyone is like
yeah.
I promise you guys, everyone is like,
I'm laughing because what Clinton is saying is 100% true. Like, sure, some people have direction in what they're doing. But for the most part, we're all just falling over each other in the dark, trying to find our way in this really confusing world.
And my favorite part about this axiom is that the only people who deny it are people who are shysters or probably
yeah.
something. People like life coaches, they're like, no, I know 100% what's happening, but you have to buy my book to find out exactly. Anyone who claims they actually know what's going on is either lying or they're trying to sell you something. There's yeah. no in between. So if you're 18 or 19 because you had to redo it, or if you're 35 and you want to go back to college, whoever you are, if you still have some notion that everyone knows what they're doing and you're the only one who's lost, everybody's like this. Don't worry about it. I promise you. Just try and make the best decisions you can with the information you have. What's that saying? That every decision you make is still just a coin flip? Even if you make it with the best intentions and yeah. you spend the most time doing research and stuff like that, at the end of the day, every decision every human makes is a coin flip. So
absolutely.
Don't worry. Try not to worry when the coin comes out tails, right? Because it was a coin flip at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I think that's going to wrap it up from us this week, though.
Yes.
I'm sure we could talk about this for many, many more hours. But yeah, to the class of 2020, I could not have done what you have done, right? Whether you passed or failed, I would have become a sniveling wreck under the pressure that you guys faced. So congratulations. If you have to rewrite, my thoughts are with you. But it's really not that big of a deal as some people have made it out to be.
Yeah, I really feel sorry for people who have parents who put undue stress. And there's a lot of parents who say that failing is the worst. Absolute worst thing that can happen. For those kids, I really, my heart goes out to them.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, just try to keep it
lit. I disagree. The worst thing you can do is not try. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest, not to get sappy, but the greatest gift you can get is just to wake up every day and not be dead.
Yeah.
So no matter what happens in your life, as long as you're still alive, and, you know, not to get morbid, but so many people died last year. If you're still alive in 2021, you're lucky.
Appreciate that, yeah.
A bit sad there, but...
let's end it off. Yeah. From myself, Brendan Lotz, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week. From Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.